Earth Sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, 22 minutes of science, interviews, and great music from Austin, Texas. I'm Jorge Salazar. This week, carbon dioxide from the air turns oceans more acidic, and hope for an HIV vaccine. Here's a scientist's soundbite.
The economics are important, and I think they're worth saving for that alone. But really, they're just extremely beautiful. I like to call these nature's masterpiece.
You're listening to marine ecologist Joan Kleypas. More with her later. First, science news of the week with Emily Howard and Michael Brennan.
A team of scientists led by the Scripps Institution of Oceanography has made the most precise measurement to date of the amount of atmospheric carbon dioxide being absorbed by Earth's global vegetation. The researchers' work appeared in the September 29 issue of the journal Nature. Plants absorb carbon dioxide, a greenhouse gas, during photosynthesis. After, measuring changes in oxygen isotopes within CO2 molecules over a period of about 30 years from 1977 through the present, these scientists found that Earth's vegetation sequesters up to 150 to 175 petagrams of carbon per year. That's in contrast to previous estimates of around 120 petagrams. Either way, it's a lot. If you convert any of those values to kilograms, you get a number with 12 zeros after it.
On October 3rd, the world's most complex ground-based astronomy observatory, the Atacama Large Millimeter Submillimeter Array, or ALMA, officially opened to astronomers and also released a first test image. It's a view of the antenna galaxies that cannot be seen at all by visible light or infrared telescopes. Though already in operation, the ALMA telescope, located on the Chonantor Plateau in northern Chile, is not yet complete. Only around a third of the telescope's eventual 66 radio antennas are installed. Working in unison, these antennas, even a partial grouping, can detect much longer wavelengths than those of visible light. This will allow scientists to study extremely cold objects in space, such as the dense clouds of cosmic dust and gas from which stars and planets form, as well as very distant objects in the early universe.
Two tornadoes struck in South Africa on October 2nd during severe local thunderstorms. The first tornado hit a shanty town near Ficksburg in what's known as the Free State, 185 miles south of Johannesburg. One child was killed, more than 40 people were hurt, and over 1,000 homes, many of them shacks, were destroyed. Hours later, a second tornado struck Dedusa, a small town about 40 miles east of Johannesburg. According to weather.com, tornadoes in South Africa are rare. They typically get a tornado about every other year. The tornado season usually starts in November. A video of the October 2nd tornado near Dedusa in South Africa has been widely circulating online. You can see it at earthsky.org.
An international team of astronomers has found the first comet confirmed to contain ocean-like water. The comet is known as Comet Hartley 2. The team reported their results on October 5th in the journal Nature. The team says the water in the comet chemically resembles the makeup of ocean water here on Earth. They found the water using the Herschel Space Observatory. The scientists say their discovery of ocean-like water in Comet Hartley 2 supports the theory that comets could have delivered some of Earth's water. Water is abundant in the universe, but scientists still aren't sure how so much water got here. There are still several theories in the running, but the comet water theory got a boost from this study.
On October 3rd, researchers at the University of California, Davis, announced that they'd successfully transformed a few everyday iPhones into medical-quality imaging devices at a very low cost. The researchers use what are called ball lenses, which are made of finely ground glass. They place the lenses on top of the iPhone camera to make the iPhone work as a microscope. They said the iPhone microscope can, for example, be used to identify different types of blood cells. The researchers said these enhanced iPhones could help doctors and nurses diagnose blood diseases such as anemia in developing nations.
Science interviews up next. We're Earth Sky, broadcast on over 1,200 stations, including Voice of America.
You've gone too far, Sky.
Planet Sky, we interview the world's top scientists. Oceans are turning more acidic from carbon dioxide humans release into the air from burning fossil fuels and deforestation. That's according to marine ecologist Joan Kleipas of the National Center for Atmospheric Research. Dr. Kleipas has done research on how changes in sea surface temperatures and seawater chemistry have impacted coral reefs. Kleipas was a member of a U.S. National Academy of Sciences committee that produced a 2010 report, Ocean Acidification, a National Strategy to Meet the Challenge of a Changing Ocean. And in 2011, she received a Heinz Award for the Environment. Earth Sky's Beth Lebwohl interviewed Joan Kleipas.
So what is ocean acidification? And what's the most important thing that people need to know about the phenomena, both in terms of cause and effect?
Ocean acidification is often called the other CO2 problem. So it is caused by the same thing that causes global warming, that is, there's an increase of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere as we burn fossil fuels. And because the carbon dioxide concentration is increasing in the atmosphere, more of that carbon dioxide is absorbed by the oceans. And very basically, as the water combines with carbon dioxide, you form carbonic acid. Acid, as you know, lowers the pH of any solution, and so the pH is decreasing. And that has consequences for marine life. So when we think about a lot of marine organisms, things like corals, clams, oysters, things that grow hard shells, those shells are made of calcium carbonate. If you reduce the amount of carbonate in the ocean, then you reduce the ability of those organisms to secrete their shells or their skeletons. And we often refer to it as being similar to osteoporosis. So there's just fewer of the building blocks available to build those hard parts.
You're known for putting ocean acidification on the map, so to speak, with I believe it was a 1999 paper in Science. Can you tell us about that? Why was the paper so groundbreaking? And also, what's changed just scientifically in terms of experts' understanding of ocean acidification since then?
In the late 1990s, there was a group of us that were all sort of heading in the same direction on this paper. And we had people looking at paleontology, people looking at the chemistry of the oceans, and people looking at the effects of chemical changes on organisms. And when this group of us got together, we sort of put all of the, you know, we joined all of the dots and realized that some pretty big changes were happening in the oceans. And based on the experimental data we had on organisms, that we were going to see some big responses in a lot of marine organisms. And so we weren't the first people to sort of raise this issue, but I think it was the first time that so many different pieces of evidence were there.
You are especially known for your work on coral reefs. Why are reefs so special and beautiful to you?
I think anyone that has had the privilege to snorkel on a reef or to scuba dive on a reef wouldn't have any trouble understanding why we should protect coral reefs. We're often sort of forced into a corner to talk about their economic value. And yes, they have tremendous economic value. They are the places in the ocean where so many of our fish depend, at least during some part of their life cycle. They provide a lot of food through fishing and through other organisms that grow on the reef for many people and cultures, particularly in third world countries. They have extremely high biodiversity, and we're just discovering now how many of those organisms produce compounds which are important for drugs, such as cancer-fighting drugs and that sort of thing. And, you know, you can go on and on. They also protect coastlines, are protected by coral reefs in many different areas. But I tend to say that, you know, the economics are important, and I think they're worth saving for that alone. But really, they're just extremely beautiful. I like to call these nature's masterpiece. If we lose coral reefs, we're really losing something that nature has taken many, many millions of years to produce. And I don't think many people would say that it's okay to do that.
Is there a danger of reefs going extinct as a consequence of ocean acidification? I mean, if not, what's the level of threat they face, and how do we know?
I'm an optimist at heart, and I don't think that reefs are going to go extinct from ocean acidification. However, that being said, we're witnessing a lot of degradation on our reefs already. We're losing reefs in certain areas. But my optimism comes from the fact that we've only been studying marine life for a few hundred years. I think the more we understand about these marine systems, the more we feel empowered to do something to protect them. I can give you an example of what we're doing in terms of trying to buy time for reefs. So we do a lot of genetic engineering with things like crops. Can we do the same thing with corals and other reef species so that when you grow these corals in a controlled environment, transplant them in the field, that you're building a better reef from the ground up? There's a lot of experimental work going on with that now, and there's some successes, but it does take time to sort of build that up. By trying to determine through modeling studies, through projections of how oceanographic circulation might change, other information like that from satellites, we're trying to determine which areas are most likely to succeed with future climate change, both warming and ocean acidification. So we're working with conservation agencies who are looking to put in things like marine protected areas.
How can you protect a reef against ocean acidification?
We know that algae that grow on the reef, these marine plants that grow side by side with corals on a lot of reefs, they remove CO2 or carbon dioxide from the water column. If you can remove carbon dioxide from the water column, you're doing the reverse of ocean acidification. And we're looking to see if we can do things like putting up farms for algal growth around a reef, which would help pull that carbon dioxide out of the water before it flows over the reef itself.
You've been listening to marine ecologist Joan Kleypas of the National Center for Atmospheric Research. We're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. We'd love to hear from you on Facebook. Join our community for science. You can find us as Earth Sky. Luis Castilla joins us to talk about an experimental vaccine for HIV being developed by scientists in Spain. Luis, welcome to the program.
Hi, Jorge. Thank you for having me. So a team of scientists in Spain led by Mariano Esteban of the National Biotechnology Center has been testing HIV vaccines with mice and monkeys for a number of years. And when these tests became highly successful, the group decided to begin human trials. The trials included 30 healthy men and women from ages 18 to 55, and they received 3 shots of the vaccines in 2009, with 90% of them developing a defense immune response to the HIV proteins. 1 year later, 85% of these subjects still retained this immune response. A key element of this vaccine is that it only uses 4 proteins from the virus, so the subjects don't develop the disease, but they still develop an immune response.
Right, it's completely safe. Nobody got infected from this experimental trial.
They only had some little side effects like stinging or a little bit of rashness when they got the vaccine. And it's important to mention that this success story is only one of the 3 steps that need to be completed to make this vaccine available to the public.
All right, so what this study seems to show is that this vaccine is eliciting a strong response to people's immune system, you know, people that are healthy. And these scientists are excited about this finding because if this vaccine, this experimental vaccine, can do this for healthy people, it can do this for, it could basically work as like a typical vaccine that people think of for the flu or something. Maybe this vaccine will be developed, as you said, in about a year, and will be able to prevent people from being infected with HIV.
Right now, they're not sure if it can prevent people from getting infected, but it can help the body fight the virus once it's inside the body.
Yeah, I like how the lead scientist, Mariano Esteban, he described how this works in that it works like showing an HIV picture to the immune system's soldiers in one's body, so they'll recognize it, and the immune system will be ready to attack this HIV virus if it appears again in a person's body in the future.
Welcome to virtual reality for immune systems.
This is very hopeful, and this provides a lot of hope for people in the future. Today, the United Nations World Health Organization estimates that more than 33 million people worldwide are infected with HIV.
You know, antiretrovirals are so expensive, you need to take them for the rest of your life. And this vaccine could provide, if not a cure, at least weaning people off these antiretrovirals so they can live with the virus and not stress so much the public health system of their countries.
Thanks, Luis.
Thank you, Jorge.
Earth Sky's Luis Castilla. And that's our show. Thank you for joining us. This week's show was recorded at the Earth Sky Studios in Austin, Texas, live music capital of the world. Our producer is Michael Brennan. Executive producers are Peter Zandan, Ryan Britton, and Deborah Bird. Our audio engineer is Eddie Campos. And special thanks this week to our musical contributors, Sleep Good, 100 Flowers, and The Black and White Years. For more information on the science and the music you heard this week, visit our website at earthsky.org. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
There are too many artists, too much art, and not enough genius, I believe. Science is the art of the next age. There are so many artists, too much heart, and not enough reason, I'm afraid. Silence is the song of the next age.